everybody. Good morning. It's Anthony again. Tuned into Update. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in on this lovely Saturday morning. A little bit of rain, but what an interesting time we're living in at the moment, eh? Wow, lots going on. So, yes, let me distract you guys. Tune on in, tell your friends, please. Send your friends a text to tune in to the best tech show in New Zealand on the air. Update, where I'll be bringing you the latest in technology, delving deep and demystifying all the technology for you guys. So yeah, Anthony Blomfield, Update, and yeah, tune on in. This is great. Let your mates know. Not many tech shows on the radio, so tell your friends if they're interested in computers or technology. Tune on in, 104.6, or stream on the internet, planetaudio.org.nz/update. So, yeah, so today I'll just quickly give you the website if you need to ask me any questions. It's update.chat, or email me hello@update.chat. Or you can, yeah, pretty much those, you'll find me there. My name's Anthony Blomfield. I'm a tech guy, and I always do a show every Saturday, just getting into the rhythm of it now, updating you with all the cool things in technology. So let's start with a good old news, shall we? Right, so ladies and gentlemen, yeah, lots going on in the old tech news, isn't there? Wow, too much. So Apple had their big release, and they did quite an interesting virtual presentation using all sorts of clever tricks to do an internet presentation of their products. And don't like giving them just always free advertising, but effectively they've released a new iWatch Series 6. And this is much bigger on the health side of things. So it monitors your heart rate and your blood pressure and things like that. And it's, pretty interesting. And they're trying to make them a little bit cheaper and a little bit more mainstream. So, yeah, and they've also come out with an iPad Air. And so the sort of word on the street is their iPads, the Apple have really put in a lot more work into their iPads than they used to. Because it's their own silicon chip inside. So they're really pushing, they're sort of a test bed before they bring their laptops to the market with all the new, their own CPUs. So they have So I think it's pretty interesting. TikTok, 48 hours. Actually less than that now, basically 30 hours. Will be banned from downloadings. Donald Trump is going to ban TikTok. They're still not completely finished the deal, but TikTok, the Chinese company, is selling its app to Oracle. Oracle is your database guys, or your, you know, who won the Team New Zealand. So that's big news from Oracle. TikTok. On a sort of interesting note that you kind of won't hear because I'm the best with the news. It's not just standing news. But AI is secretly making leaps and bounds. A little bit scary, to be honest. And the big thing is now is how much AI is going into surveillance of populations. So, yeah, there is something to be thought about these cameras that we see around the place. I think we need to have a grown-up discussion between what's called a dumb camera, which is just a camera that sees what you're doing, and a camera connected to an AI system. I don't think we have them in New Zealand, but effectively, they can learn who you are just by your walk. So, yeah. So that's some pretty big bounds in AI, and I think we should be open and transparent with the power of it. Yes, AI is making some leaps and bounds. It can do now video editing and stuff, and so it's pretty cool. What was the other thing I had to tell you? Sorry, guys. Just Apple's released a 10-point iOS 14 too, but yeah, you probably already know that. Where did I have this? So if I remember anything else there that I had for you, but that's the news. So let's get straight back into the show for the morning. So, yep, we're going to have some fun today. Thank you. Right, ladies and gentlemen. So, yeah, Anthony Blomfield with the tech show called Update. I'm bringing you all the latest in technology and delving deep into tech and answering your questions when I need to. But because I'm basically a little bit off the sort of standard format because, COVID's down, I'm sort of giving myself the ability to kind of delve into into some sort of side topics of technology, which I quite enjoy talking about. And we're going to continue from last week. And if you didn't get last week's listen to it, please go to Planet Audio and look at for Update, and you'll be able to download my latest podcast. I'll send them to your friends. Yeah. So what we were talking about last week is how do you come up with ideas? I told you how to make ideas. How do you learn how to come up with an idea? And two, how to execute that idea. And then hopefully today I'm going to get into how do you make money from your ideas. And so just to go back what I was talking about last week, how do you come up with an idea? And these are sort of business or technology ideas, if you will. So in other words, maybe you're, I don't know, low-level help desk technician or you're just sort of a freelancer or you're just running your own bakery and you're always trying to think of what you could innovate in. So I was saying, golden rule one, everybody, please go and get yourself a little notebook. Actually, not a little notebook. That's a lie. A nice A4, A5 notebook. And keep it in one place in your house. And every night, put it on the dinner table and scribble down. Not necessarily always ideas. Ideas are great if you've got them. But in the first instance, just all the things that during the day that seemed to be difficult or you thought there should be a way to solve something. So basically, sort of precursor to ideas in many ways is looking at problems, basically. And the idea was that you can start with the most mundane problems. So, every time I get to work, it takes a while to find a car park, I always seem to hit the red lights, It doesn't matter. You don't have to. So the big thing is when you're sort of coming up with ideas is not to try to feel like you've got to get them all down and, solve something. Just write them down. And also, it's the silly little things that you will probably think are not important. Write those down. It's good for your brain too. So you just get really used to, I went to work and there wasn't a car park. And also, it was raining and my laptop got wet and when I opened the door, I only had one hand to open the door and all these things. And then over time, you start writing them down. You say, hang on a minute. I could just put a proximity sensor on my door. And now I could just, as soon as I get there, it would detect my Wi-Fi from my laptop and open or something. And eventually you'll come up with solutions. And these should, if you're smart, you should be able to monetize them. So, yeah, that was sort of coming up with ideas. That was last week. And then I talked about how you execute an idea. And I did have to rush it, to be fair. And that's one was going down the software route to execute your idea. And the second was to the electronics route, which is basically... Basically, you know, the idea of electronics that if you wanted to make some sort of gadget, for example, that sat on your desk that did something, you know, we call them widgets, then I was telling you that you can now do that much easier than people think. Electronics is beautiful now. It's demystified. So, you know, we when we're growing up, we often just look at an electronic device and think, oh, what's in there? We haven't bloody have no clue what's going on. But if you're even thinking about getting into making your own device for something, and what I was saying last week, guys, and please do this, especially if you've got boys who are interested in electronics, or girls, PC here, you have to go and buy an Arduino or an Arduino kit even. And Arduino starts at like $10. You can buy them online from heaps of places. And what they are, just to reiterate last week's, is there's a Spanish company years ago that they basically open-sourced and compartmentalized electronics, modern electronics. And we refer to these generally as sort of digital circuitry. And what it is, an Arduino, is just a little brain on a little box, okay, or a little circuit board. And effectively, it's just a little computer, right? But so in other words, it's got a little bit of RAM. It's got a little CPU or processor. And these have been around now. Lots of hobbyists are using these. In fact, big businesses are. You can even automate a factory with one of these. You know, it's insane. You know, to automate a fruit picking factory in New Zealand, you'd spend tens of millions. But you can technically buy an Arduino for $20. Then you just have to spend a lot of time. But yeah, they're not really designed for commercial. They're really hobby things, but they're pretty powerful. And what they are is a little brain, and they basically just have one side of the board inputs, so maybe 10 inputs, and the other side of the board has 10 outputs, and then basically a battery, and then your CPU. And this is the core of the Arduino system, and this what I'm saying about this is just so that if you're interested in electronics, every modern electronics device is, in a way, some form of an Arduino. Every electronics device really normally has what's called a little brain or a CPU. Pretty much even your microwave, you know. Probably not your toaster, but most things have a little CPU. So buy one of these if you're interested. And then what happens is the inputs, you can buy almost an unlimited third-party arrangement array of inputs. So and then same with the outputs, okay? And then it comes with a little USB port, and you can program the CPU, all right? Now, this is, when people hear about programming electronics, we always think, oh, I couldn't do it. But actually, this is just like Lego when you're a kid, with a little bit more, you know, software stuff. So, how do we do this? So what you do is you get an Arduino, you play, and you think, okay, well, let's start just really basic. How do I water my pot plants when I'm going on holiday up to the batch? So, well, you just start using common sense, but effectively you would get something like a moisture detector sensor, all right? So in the kit, if you bought the kit, you generally get something like 50 different kinds of sensors. So you can get like heat sensors, temperature sensors, humidity, altitude, vibration, sound, light, you know, flux, all the different sensors, pH even. And what you do is you go, well, okay, well, I probably have this little sensor, and you plug it into your Arduino, and they're only about $10 a sensor, and you go, okay, well, stick that into my pot plant. And then on the other side, you'd say, okay, well, what do I want to do with the output? Well, I'd probably just want to turn on a little tap, right? So then you think, okay, well, an output, what you do in the Arduino, you can buy these little output devices, and so some of them are what's called transistor-controlled valves. So in other words, like a little tap that a little electrical signal opens and closes the tap. So here you go. Already, you know, this is the kind of the cool thing about Arduinos and where we are now with electronics. You really can do anything you want. So anyway, so you put that in and you say, okay, well, I'll stick the sensor into the little pot plant, and then I put the little sensor into a little hose, okay, and so I run a little tap, water pipe from a tap, you know, into the pot plant, and at the end of it, I'll put this little valve that opens and closes when there's a current, Okay, now all you really need to do is you get to program the CPU. And so the CPUs in the Arduinos come with their own instruction manuals and codes. And you'd probably do something like, okay, well, what are the parameters for the input settings? And it might say something like, well, it will submit a voltage between 1 and 5, and 1 is no moisture and 5 is wet. And then you just sort of calibrate and say, well, if I get a voltage signal of like 2 volts, then what I'm going to do is say like an if statement in my little code. And this is the demystifying of our modern world. And you can do it for $30. And you'd say, all right, well, if the moisture is coming in and it's saying between, let's say, 3 and 4, I mean, between 1 and 4 volts, you would program the CPU to say, open the valve on output 1 for letting water in. All right, and then, of course, what you'd have to do is what you could do is like a little loop in your code or a time delay, and you'd say, open for 30 seconds, then go back to sleep for another hour or something, so then it doesn't just keep testing. Yeah, and usually, you know, so if you realize the power of that, you realize, hang on, there's not much in the modern world that you can't use an Arduino for if you're interested in making some sort of widget. So in other words, vibration, sound, moisture detections, times, you could have things sort of running your factory, for example. You know, you really could. You could say things like, okay, well, I do peanut butter here, and I have the peanut butter come out there, and it goes down the trolley or whatever, and then maybe the peanuts are measured for the weight. And so what you could technically do is you could say, well, let's put a whole lot of sensors. So there's a weight sensor, and there's a humidity sensor again, and there's a temperature sensor along your conveyor belt. Run it all to a little Arduino for $10, and then all you need to do sort of is use some logic and go, well, what are the parameters that I'm interested in? You know, what's the size that I'm looking for my peanut? You know, my peanut and my... And then, boom, and the output is, generally, open and close a conveyor belt or open and close a gate. And effectively, what was once a million-dollar industry, which was huge automation machines, and they're still applicable. If you're running a little business, you can get an Arduino to automate your little bakery. So there you go. So that was just an aside to tell you how, if you wanted to go down making some sort of brilliant idea for a electronic widget, go and buy an Arduino, please. Cool? Cool. And then just to reiterate, so that's, so, you know, there's no excuse now. You don't have to say one day I'd be rich if I could make my idea. You can go to Dick Smith Electronics online and buy one. Second thing was if you wanted to make a software app. And I was saying, okay, so software is not as hard as people think. I mean, it is. It's more time consuming rather than hard. It is pretty hard, but it's all in the planning. So... two things is we generally now have diverged, I think, in software for mainstream and between a web system and a mobile system. And most sort of amateurs who have an idea or, you know, want to do something interesting to make a dollar would go down the mobile route. And making a mobile app now, you definitely need to, you know, get a developer to do it for you. It is definitely a skill set. But what you can do, as I was saying last week, is you can start writing down all the things you want it to do and not want to do and how to do it. You know, developing is almost the icing on the cake. It's all the pre-thought of how it would work and why it would work and how you'd do it. And a lot of people, and I'll let you in a secret that developers get upset, is clients go to them and just go, I have an idea, build it. You have to formulate your idea into pretty much, if you haven't got 20 pages of text, you haven't done your job. You have to have 20 pages of this feature does this, this feature does this, this feature does this. And if you do that, you can get a really bargain on a developer. So what I'm saying last week, if you have an idea for a mobile app, don't think you have to go spending, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Just start going through all the difficulty of making it, writing it all down, and then when you get to a developer, you won't have to pay so much. Cool? All right. And then that's the same on the website as well, really. So that's just reiterating last week on when you've got an idea, how to get an idea, how to execute it. Cool, thanks. Just going to have a cough. Right, excuse me. Sorry about that. So now, the next, what's today about? So what I'm going to talk about today, and this is really good, and this is hopefully the Fonterra people are listening to this, is ideas are good, execution's good, but the thing you cannot take your eye off right from day one is money. Money. Let's not play the game of making a great idea. Sounds good. You know, it's all good, but at the end of the day, it's got to make you money. And I'm sorry to say, I have seen some beautiful ideas out there sitting in vaporware, going nowhere, wasting everyone's money, all the investors' money. So, how do you make money out of your idea? Okay. Well, first of all, be careful about putting a lot of money in to start with. Okay, guys? Do not think that you have to start burning lots and lots and lots and lots of money to make a great technology solution. Just your intellect is the most powerful thing you have, okay, when it comes to making a technology solution. And that's free. It's in your head. And so a lot of time people will spend years on development when they've only spent a month on the intellectual problem solving. So use a whiteboard. Get any friends you have almost in this day and age. And meticulously use your intellect to look at your idea, how will it affect your customer and how it make money. And do that time and time and time again. So that's the big secret when it comes to making money out of a product. You cannot just go, okay, I've got a good idea, spend a lot of money, hope it sells. My experience, you can almost feel like you're setting yourself up for failure. Number one is computers are dumb. The only thing that's smart is us, especially me. You have to put all the energy into all the problems first, pen and paper. Cool? Excuse me. So, yeah. So that's the big thing. Software just does what people want it to do. You have to spend a lot of time on all the things, problem solving. So, keys to remember. Number one is we're too scared to charge money for so many things. So let's... If you're making an idea, let's say it's a widget, so two things here. One is, let's say a mobile app, because that's kind of our forte here on this show. If you wanted to make money out of your mobile app, okay, so certain things you have to remember. Number one, it's the norm now is to have small amount of money from a lot of different people, microtransactions. The big thing you have to remember when you're making an app, and this is the big thing, people, you make an app for your customer, think about your customer, how they will make money out of using your product. That is golden rule. If your customer's not making money out of your idea, they won't pay you. So you don't have to think three levels down, but you have to think two levels down. If you're just creating a good service and you think it's fantastic, my experience is customers will not pay for it. They will pay for it if they will make a dollar out of it. Okay? Pretty simple rule, right? So, for example, you're selling T-shirts on the internet. Generally, those people buying those T-shirts, they've got not a lot of motivation to buy it off you. But if you're selling a device to save electricity on your account by, I don't know, some device, you've got a customer who goes, hang on, that's a dollar and I'm saving $2. That's where you need to be, okay? To be honest, it's so hard to get your idea into manufacturer these days that you have to, your idea, literally you have to know what the money you'll make for your customer, and then I generally believe it generally will work, and then it just comes down to marketing. So is that okay, guys? If I go through this, some feedback, I'll just listen to the audience to say yes. Oh, good. I heard you all at once. So, yeah, how do you get your app then to make a dollar? So the first thing is If you have a solution for a customer, it can't just be good. That will never work. It has to solve at least three major problems for your customer, my experience. Okay? So in other words, if you made an alarm system that you stick it on your house and it automatically turns on when you drive away because it senses how far your car is because, you know, you've got your Wi-Fi and your phone. Good. That solves one thing. You don't have to turn on your alarm. Not good enough. Second thing it has to do, for example, you could say, okay, number two, it also monitors the air conditioning and basically keeps, you know, if it gets too moist in the house, it opens the window, for example. Okay, two problems. And number three, it might say, you might get, I have a builder coming around and they haven't got a key, but I've told them to go in and fix the sink. Maybe you can send a signal to this alarm system to open the door. Now, there's three different things it does. Then you have a product. So it's got to have three main things minimum for a user. So generally, if you've come up with a great idea, think about that customer, what else they would do on that, and then put three main things. So, that's... And you might say, okay, well, there's apps out there that make money like Uber that just do one thing. Well, sure, but they have millions or billions in marketing budget, and we don't. You generally have maybe $500. So your app has to be better than that. So three things it has to solve, okay? So that's rule one. Two, you have to have more than just one income stream. That is rule two, okay? So when you design your app, you cannot just simply say, well, the app will do something for my customer, so I'll charge 99 cents to download, okay? That will never do. You always have to have, again, three ways of getting money at least. So you might do something like, I will do premium services inside the app where they get new features, and maybe three, you have a system where you can upsell them to another product that you have. Like they get the app, but then they can also buy through your app, I don't know, cheaper tickets overseas, and you get money for that. So you have to have multiple income streams, okay? Okay, so I think we're getting there. So, 1, 2, 3. Now, the big thing is, most companies I find in New Zealand, and it really upsets me, is they will just say, I will just leave it to the advertising revenue of my app. No, 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 no. That means that the app's not good enough to really be valued by your customer. You've got to have the app be purchased by your user, really, or real money somewhere, because if you haven't done that, you haven't done enough hard work in the beginning. It's got to be valuable. And number two, it's much better to have an app for 99 cents and then give away discount coupons or free coupons on your little ad that you've put on YouTube, okay, to get people buying, than to say it's free. So that's a big thing. Charge people. Right. Number four is... So try to make as many different ways of getting money through that app. Number four, try to work with your competition if you have an idea. I think this idea that my app's going to be better than theirs, no. Work with your competition. So your competition will often have a particular thing it's solving for a customer, but they might not want to do the customer service, for example. Or they might not want to do the premium version. Or they might want to do, for example, they have an app and it's for fishing. But they get a lot of people who, have language issues. So maybe you can say, look, hey guys, whenever you get this kind of customer on your app, send them to us and we'll do something for you. Work with your competition because you will. What happens on apps is it's a lonely world for a customer. They don't know which is good, but if you get collaboration where one app will recommend another, then you've got it, you've got this thing. Cool. All right. Next thing, how to make money out of your website, your web app. Okay. So, if you, just thinking here, when you basically do your app, the big thing is you have three, like I say, normally three things that you're going to be solving for your customer, okay? So it might be finding a cheaper park, getting a better deal on a hamburger, I don't know, being able to do their school results, see what the friends are doing. These are good, but then what you have to do is you have to improve all the invisibles. So you have to say things like, okay, I've got the three features that are good for my customer. Then you do all the invisibles that you just should do with your customer would never notice. That's like, how easy was it? How fast was it? How much data, oh yeah, this is a good point, did I was able to go back and look at from the past? Because that's where version 2 is a big deal. A lot of these apps that we use, we don't realize that version 2 normally on the App Store is 100 times better than version 1. Because what they do, the developers, is they hide all the improvements from you just simply get a better experience and you don't notice it. And that's where New Zealand, we really have to do this a lot better. When you've made your app and you've put it on the App Store, that's version 1. You have about a 3-month grace period where customers will go, oh yeah, it's a couple of bugs. Not good enough. Your version 2 needs to have all the functionality, but 3 times the efficiency and joy for your customer. So that's where you've got your version 1. Version 1 is just out the door. Version 2, it's got to be fast, easy, smart, secured, you know, all those things. And number 3, going back to how to make money again, if you're at, for those of you just tuning in, basically what I'm talking about tonight or today is how to come up with a cool idea if you're a freelancer, how to execute your idea, and how to get money out of your idea. And because I know what radio is like, you might have just tuned in. I'll just say again what I've gone through. One is basically coming up with ideas, which is looking for problems and day-to-day issues, buying yourself a nice journal, and making a habit of every night writing it down. I won't go into execution. You can, you know, download my podcast for that. But I want to go back to another fourth way of making money out of your app or online app or widget, for that matter. And this is a big thing New Zealand does just get wrong so many times. God, it pisses me off. Data. Money and data, okay? We've all heard about Cambridge Analytica. That's one extreme of money making out of data, but data is valuable. So when you provide your app, make sure you have some beautiful data collection at the back end, okay? An app, what the customer sees, in my experience, is like the tip of an iceberg. It's 3%. Your product really should be hidden on the server, and that's data crunching, okay? And often, you know, be nice to your customer. Tell them you're getting the data, but get the customer's data, okay? And the power of that is so many ways because you know, like I say, if you're doing one that's, I don't know, helping students choose what is the best university to go to, for example, you know. What you need to do is you need to be sucking all the data down that the customer puts in, obviously, and basically getting as much as you can. Number 2, you need to get all the metadata you can. That's free. That's things like what time of the day. Even things, you cannot be lazy, even things like what was the weather like at that time of the day? What was the location? What was the prevailing news at that time of the day? What was the traffic flow? That's all data that the customer doesn't put in that you should be able to truncate from other sources. And this is really rich. So people think data is, oh, your name and email address. No, fail. You've got all the customer's data, including things like how long did they click on your app, what ones did they swipe, did they use two fingers to swipe or one finger. This is all really valid. You cannot just simply say, oh, they clicked on, you know, you're selling something, you know, you're selling, I don't know, energy efficiency light bulbs or energy efficiency inverter for the house, and they clicked on the model and then they left the site. Well, you need to go, well, hang on, how long did they click on that model? What else did they click on? This is the metadata that we're not using enough. So you clicked on the metadata, then truncate data that's free for you that's also valid. So things like location of the mobile at the time. What kind of mobile was it? Was this a Samsung or Apple? These things become important later on. Was it the latest iOS? What was the screen size? What is their proximity to fast food restaurants? Put your data in and you'll be amazed, okay? So once you've got enough fat data, you can do all sorts of clever things. And this is not sort of some evil, scary plot. This is simply going, your customer, basically like everybody, is stressed out, wanting to get a job done, get it done quickly, and move to the next task in life. And so if you're getting enough data, your job is to simply go, let me preeminate what my customer will do next. What will they want? Where are they going to go? That's your job, is to basically go, I will do the heavy lifting with the data, so my customer, just the app feels like it knows what they're doing, all right? So that's what we it doesn't have to be artificial intelligence. We're not at that level yet, but just statistics, you've got to have that now. All right, so you click the data. Now, when it comes to clicking the data, don't think of the person who might create your database as the person who's going to necessarily give really good value to get using that data. Putting the data and taking the data out is a good skill. But what you really want is someone with life experience. This is a big miss we do with technology. It's about life experience, because when you've got all the data, you need to be able to make natural assumptions of your customer. And this is not a tech person that will do this. Too many people think it's the tech person's role. No, it's not. It literally could be your mother or grandmother going, hey, this person was looking for an inverter to save electricity, and they happened to be outside Harvey Norman. We know that. We also know it was stormy. We also know that they were using the latest iPhone. In fact, they did it twice, from an iPhone and an iWatch, blah, 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 blah. And then you should be able to go, hang on, well, we'll work out that the kind of demographic of that person and why they would be looking for that. You might even do something like drive around to see the store that they're outside and see if there's a product that's similar to yours. See what I mean? So that's where the two and two comes together. You've got to get the data, and then you've got to sort of make some good life experience assumptions about that data. And here's always the secret. Think about what will make your customer happier. Okay? It's not tech. It's not about that. It's love your customer sincerely. Why do they using your app for a solution? How do they get that? I mean, what can you do with all that data you've collected to make that person's life easier? And, you know, a lot of people look at databases, these data scientists and stuff, and they think of it like numbers and metadata. No. Think of it as, we've all got friends. We've got different friends who have different personalities. We know what our friends are like. We know the crazy woman, or we know the bored guy, or whatever. We know what friends are like. So all we're doing is we're going, hang on, I could tell that customer was this kind of person by looking at the metadata. Okay, so you're just going, oh, yeah, I could tell that probably person was a bit worried, or I could see that was sort of like, would be like my neighbor. You know, they would be that kind of customer. And that's what metadata's for. It's not for the tech heads. It's for you to draw assumptions that you, so you can better serve your customer. You really care about your customer, and that's where you start to make money out of your app. Because what you're trying to do is you're trying to make the customer's day easier by using your product. And not just a little bit, like 100% in some cases. So it's like, oh, I've got an app to so they can find the cheapest petrol, and every time they're on Dominion Road, they don't use it between these two set of traffic lights, but between these two set of traffic lights, they use it to find cheaper petrol. Well, go and work it out. Maybe there's a situation where they can't, you know, stop for their phone or whatever, and maybe you put in the app between these two set of satellites, it just pops up on their screen without them touching it, you know. And if you really care about your customer, you'll naturally be able to look at the metadata and work out what you need to do. Cool? You understand that, people? Tick, 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 tick. Good. So, yeah, that's metadata. Now, then, the third bit of your data, okay, which is sort of interesting, is you can use data now, then, to monetize certain data flows. So, for example, if you are making an app that finds the cheapest petrol, and you know between these two parts of Dominion Road, no one ever, you know, uses the app for the cheapest petrol. They always go to this, you know, petrol station that just happens to be the first one, and it's always more expensive. You can get all those numbers, and you can go to the petrol station that's further up the road and go, look, if you pay us, we will make sure that we promote your petrol station between these two set of lights. And you pay us. And they're like, sure. And then you say, sorry about this. You will say, okay, so basically what will I do with this app? The customer will say, so when they've got when you've got this data, your ability to go to your larger customers, i.e., maybe your wholesalers, and say, "Look, I know exactly what my customers are doing. So if you pay us, we will simply push our customers onto you." So this is a really good way to monetize your app. Cool. All right. Lastly, then the good thing on that is if you've got enough metadata, you can say things like, petrol station further up Dominion Road, not only will I push my customers or promote your petrol station between these two locations, but you can see how many there are, and you don't have to pay me up front anything. All you do is pay everyone that comes to you because of this app, and they get a list, you see. So you can have sort of sell your app to your wholesalers without even a hard sale, because you just go, look, I'll increase your business, and boom. You know, and that's sort of when you start going, you know, you start becoming, you know, you could do quite nicely out of your idea. You know, you've got the data, you can sell it to your wholesalers, you can make sense of it, you've got metadata. And then you can even do crazier things, like you can go, oh, well, I've got this data now. I can sell another product to my customer, or another little app that they download, or add another feature. So now, not only do they find the cheapest petrol, for example, now you notice all your same people are also, for example, having problems with, I don't know, traffic jams at this point. And I don't know. You could say, oh, here's a text if you know, I'm thinking outside the square. Yeah, well, you could just do the old cheapest drive-through cheeseburger, for example. So you can add to your app. So that's that, how to make your money out of it. Now, going back, if I can, to so we shouldn't be scared of collecting data. Number one, it's a monetized app. Number two, make sure you charge from many different ways. Number three, this same solution can be done. Excuse me, I just got a call here. The same solution can be done if you basically sell your an actual electronics device. Okay, so we often assume that if you're selling a physical product, let's say a light bulb that changes colour with, and you've got an app for it, and you can change the colour of the light bulb from red to blue, you know, a mood lighting bulb, right, or a Christmas tree lighting bulb, right? And we go, oh, well, that's a hard product, so, you know, there's nothing to do with data. We don't collect data from that. But a hardware product, this is where we need to do more value adding as a country. If you make a widget, okay, what I mean by widget is like effectively a, you know, a box of electronics that does something, you know, it might cook your eggs quicker, it might, you know, defrost your fridge or something. This widget needs, and this we need to be doing this a lot more, needs what's called a wraparound digital service. And I, you know, won't get me started how angry I am with New Zealand's manufacturers selling its products with no data collection around them. So if you, if we are smart, when we sell a widget, there's many, many ways where we can wrap around digital services with that. Let's think of the most simple one. Yeah, let's go back to the light bulb then that changes your house from, you know, mood lighting. Okay. So if you're making this bulb, let's say you made one, you got them imported, you know, maybe made in China or whatever, and you got them delivered, you don't know who's buying them, you just know that they've been bought. What you really want to do is you want to start by having some customer portal metrics. And generally how you do that is simply starting with a website that says how to get the best out of your product. Okay? These wraparound services are really where you have to meet a physical widget with the digital world, and then you get what's called value-adding to your customer. And we're just not doing this enough. I mean, you don't even need an electronic product. You can even do it with things like literally potatoes and eggs. And they're doing that in Norway. Is it Norway? It's one of the – I think – no, it's Amsterdam. What they've done is they've created a blockchain solution where you scan your eggs now and you can see all the information about the hen and what the health of the hen was and when it was born and how much grain it had. And so there's this whole thing about tracing your food now, and that gives value adding to that brand. So in other words, people would buy those eggs because they know they can see it. And that's what we have to do in New Zealand. And so especially if you're doing a hardware device, you need to start with a website that says how to get the best food product. Number two, you need a website that's often, and if you're doing a website that's for a hardware product, you have to have gamification in it. Okay, so you see this sort of like your muesli bars now, you go to the website and you can play a game, you know, click the chocolate. But if you're selling, you know, your light bulbs again to make your house cool, make sure your website is fun. Okay, so in other words, it has to have gamification in it. What I mean, though, that once you get to the website, it will have, not necessarily a silly game, but it might do things like, ideas on making a Christmas tree look cool, and you can, I don't know, spin the Christmas tree around on the website and click a couple of things and then it plays a jingle. You know, it can be an actual game, but you've got to have gamification to attract an audience to make it feel good when they're there. It has to be helpful. So in other words, how to get the product useful. It has to have all the, you have to be basically like a fun portal if you're making an electronics device. Okay. So you need, you know, your blog, your video, your gossip, and all the recommendations. And then what you do is you start, again, getting data, okay? So what you do is you try to find a system where your customer goes to your website, and if they can, they're putting in their serial number of the product, for example, or QV code of the product, or the product number, or even the store they bought it from. Basically, any information you need to start collating with information you already know. In other words, yes, we know that that serial number came from that store, and I know it was this batch, and we know what features it had. And again, then you start using your metadata. So you're saying, why did they, you know, what time, how long after they bought the product were they in my website? You know, was it straight away? What were their questions? What were their problems? And then you start using the metadata and the data again to create value around your widget. All right. Now, I don't obviously know what your widget is, so, you know, this would always look different. But the premises is, if you're just selling a hardware, like lots and lots, let's say you're importing electric scooters, and you go, oh, well, you've designed your own one, throw them out. You need to have your website data collection, you know, how well did they go, what, you know, maybe try to get as much data organically, i.e., in other words, they have a Bluetooth, they turn it on, you ask permission to transmit all the data as they're driving the scooter back to your server. This is valuable. You know, you start to know, oh, yep, as soon as it gets to this battery life, it starts to deteriorate and then we have problems. And this is, you know, this is what we call about the knowledge economy. When you wrap around your database, your data analytics to your widget. Right, people? So, yeah. Now, you can see that's probably would be wise for some more companies to get into data analytics in New Zealand. Hopefully there's a good smart company that does that. But, yeah, you got to get into that area. And don't think, again, when you come up with a digital product, the intellect is in your head, not in the app, not in the developer. Don't expect a developer to create value for your customer, okay? Don't expect them to know what will make your customer happy. That's your job. Your job to work out what's the sort of data that I want, and how will it work, and where will it go. The developer literally works with zeros and ones. They don't really care if your customer's happy or not happy. That's not their job. Their job is to put the zeros in the right places, all right? And and a lot of this sort of stuff is just common sense. So instead of going to sort of some great data scientists and all the rest, if you're doing a widget or a mobile app, literally just get a big piece of paper, A2, and start writing down all the things that you think is important to your customer, yeah? So, yeah. So I guess a pretty different sort of topic today, but like I think it's relevant because a lot of freelancers and a lot of people unfortunately just simply create copy what's already been done in the market. You know, I'm just going to do the same thing again, but cheaper. Well, you're wasting time. Come up with a problem, solve that problem, make a solution, monetize it, take the money, bank it, pay your mortgage off. All right, people? So that's Anthony. That's, again, my website is update.chat. Or hello at update.chat. And, you know, this is a bit different today because it's COVID week, but to get into things. And so hopefully you've sort of learned something by that. And, get an Arduino if you're into electronics. Get radical. And next week I'll sort of get back into the main system of answering questions. All right, people, so have a good week. Enjoy your technology, be crazy, and think different. All right, take care.